Next up, we have representing Frigg Magazine, someone who, in my opinion, does God's work. He teaches creative writing. God bless you, sir. Ross McMeekin.
I'm supposed to follow fisting the dearly departed. That's amazing. Does anybody read The Onion?
Yeah.
Did anybody read the article they had about second person?
No.
Don't read it. It makes me feel like an asshole for reading my first piece in second person.
Which maybe I am.
Is it in Comic Sans as well?
It's in Comic Sans. It's got decorative gourds throughout as well. Yeah. Thanks a lot for having Ellen Parker. Thanks for having me. It's fun to be here. This has been a great reading. I'm going to read two news stories that I haven't read before, so hopefully it goes well. This one's called Missed Photographs. It's actually three kind of microfictions that tie together. Maple. Three maples form a grove in the middle of a park. One still has leaves colored the meat of a pistachio. One has leaves the color of tulips, with a few bleeding their way to saffron. The third brings to mind dying embers in a wood stove. A man walks up and stands beside you as you photograph the trees. He says nothing. You turn and smile briefly, with your eyes and with your cheeks, but not with your teeth. You continue clicking, but know it's no longer photographs you capture. It's clear he's not here for the maples. You watch their bouffants quake in the breeze and at the same time feel his eyes peel their way through your wool pea coat, down to your cardigan sweater, into your wire bra, and along the surface of your skin. Three maples form a grove in the middle of a park. One is now green, one is yellow, and the third is red. Wood duck. The rest are mallards, but then there's this other one. You've never heard your boyfriend use the word plumage before, never iridescent. You wonder how many other words he keeps hidden, waiting for an object to emerge to tote them out into the open. Take a picture of it, he says, and you try. But it's as if the duck knows exactly what you're up to and doesn't want any part. He steals the camera from your hands and climbs on top of a park bench to take the photo on his own. You wonder what words he has for that. You have a few. Flock. The birds on the shoreline take flight into a cloud that ripples and furls and folds in on itself. You lift the camera to your eye to take the picture, but he blocks your viewfinder with his hand. You remove the camera from your eye and he's close. He's picked this moment. You are alone on the winter beach. As you roll all over each other, sand gets into everything, and parts of you freeze while others steam. When it's done and you open your eyes, snow is falling. But it's the kind of snow that melts the moment it touches your parka. All right, this second one is called Anachronisms of the Stomach. And I'm a new father. I've got a 5-month-old baby girl. And so I'm writing all of these fear-based fictional pieces of grown-up kids. So, and Bob's in my writing group. He has to read everyone. Sorry. Yeah, actually, and there's more. This is one you actually haven't read, which is, yeah, it's frightening. Anachronisms of the Stomach. For his high school English class, my son Eli has to write an essay about how each generation inevitably battles the one that precedes it, referencing Greek and Roman mythology. With a mouthful of lasagna, he says, it kind of feels like a stretch. I mean, all except Cronus. And I'm glad he's being critical of his assigned work, but as I tell him this, I find myself speaking faster than normal and using words like notion, assertion, and anachronism. I'm filling every last bit of air with academic jargon because the assignment feels like an invitation to be critical of our father and son relationship. I don't want that conversation to begin, ever. I'm a little boy again, smiling as my father spanks me. "Yeah," he says, after I'm done holding forth. He doesn't call attention to the fact that I'm being weird. I wonder how long that sort of grace will last. I suspect part of it comes from being bullied. He's never hid from anyone his brains, and he can't hide his narrow, disproportionate face, a genetic gift from me. And he hasn't yet given himself permission to fight back against his enemies. I fear they are damaging him. I fear I'm one of them. My son spins the ice in his empty glass and says, "I mean, Cronus swallowed his children." I say, "Well, Cronus is one of the more ambiguous examples," and proceed away from the dinner table to the ivory tower. It's the parenting mistakes I've committed. There are too many to remember. The time I didn't show up to his saxophone recital. That summer I sent the application in late and he had to miss space camp. These may sound small, but we all inhabit our own little familial bubble, and what occurs inside creates its own proportion. I didn't talk to my father for 2 years for some seriously mundane shit. And all this wouldn't be a big deal, except for the fact that I don't just love Eli. I really like him. But there's that other fact. He had no say in being born. I chose to have him in my life. But he has yet to realize that he can also choose me. I feel like keying his English teacher's car. "Well, have fun writing it," I say. He rolls his eyes and begins talking about this sci-fi card game role-playing tournament this weekend. It costs $100. The top 5 get a payout. He's saved 90 and needs 10 from me. He's recently reorganized his deck and now dominates the daily lunch table games. And I'm so glad we're discussing something else, I almost tell him yes. But then I remember the aggro punks that hang out at the gaming store and the shit they've put him through. I've watched him walk through those doors dressed in his polo shirt, and God bless him, his pleated slacks, and I felt my heart pound. I've said prayers in the car after dropping him off, even though I don't believe in any God. I know I can't protect him. I remind myself that those guys haven't yet stopped him from playing. That says something. But it still doesn't say enough for me, at least not now. I tell him, "We'll talk once you have that essay finished." He shrugs and forks another large hunk of lasagna and swallows and burps. I summon a burp in response. He nods in approval. The conversation is ended. He heads upstairs and I have yet to stomach my first bite. The ceiling above me creaks as he walks down the hallway to his bedroom. As I clean the dishes and play our conversation over in my head, I wonder how it would read if I was searching Eli's memory instead of my own. Which makes me think about how history is written not only by those who live to tell about it, but care to tell about it. Which makes me wonder if there's a chance the original scribe got Cronus wrong. Maybe the old god didn't give a shit about keeping the crown. Maybe power meant nothing to him. Maybe, when he first held each of his children's soft, tiny bodies in his hands, he just couldn't handle having them out in the universe, so weak and vulnerable. Perhaps when he saw their quivering lips and kicking legs and touched the newborn acne pocking their cheeks, the idea that he could do something so terrible as to deserve his children's wrath was too much. Could it be that when he swallowed them whole, all he wanted was to keep his little bundles as close to him as possible for as long as they would allow? Perhaps Cronus wasn't trying to prevent a coup. Perhaps he was only trying to delay the inevitable separation. More anachronisms. I flip the lever and the dishwasher begins its nightly rumble. And I picture Zeus, eyes lit with fury, lightning bolts crackling in his palms, finally bellowing to his father all the reasons for his anger. I turn off the kitchen light and wonder if that was also the first moment that Cronus could look at his child without fear.